Well, welcome. We can start off with the chant and then Neti will come. And Anzurbas, penetrating and perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 kalpas, having it to see and listen to remember and accept. I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. Well, I'm just so kind of high. Even though I didn't do the cooking for the food not bombs, I just kind of kept this energy going from you know, I was here for the start off of the cooking, and we had all these cooks, and then I've spoken to a couple of them, you know, since we all got back, and it just felt real good to have the kitchen filled with these fresh vegetables and us looking around and saying, how can we turn all of this into a, you know, cohesive soup? And it came out great, I heard, and the serving, only a couple of us, I wasn't one of them, only a couple of the cooks were able to go down for the serving, and they said that was very successful. And it was the biggest, they said it was the biggest group there that they've ever had. The biggest group. Yeah. Yeah. And we must have cooked, at least twice as much soup as we ever did, because they gave us, they've been kind of picky. They said, you know, one, we always come too late, and so they wanted us to come earlier, and then they gave us these big pots, and they said, fill them up. You know, our pots weren't enough, so it was very good. And the only reason I couldn't do it is I sponsor this music event, and this is the only concert that they had on Sundays. I didn't even realize it, that it was on a Sunday. And I signed up to be the sponsor, and so I had to go there. But Michelle Sanger, I brought him along, and he knew all the musicians, and so he made it very lively. He introduced me to all the musicians at the end. So maybe that's the reason I'm feeling. I mean, that combination is the reason that I just feel like I have a lot of energy. And the Lotus Sutra is very energetic. There's just a couple of you guys that weren't here last time, but it's a very colorful, ornate, one might say Baroque, just like the Baroque concert I went to tonight, with lots of ornamentation. Lots of colorful scenery is described, lots of colorful people in there. There's an 8-year-old dragon girl plays a big part in the Lotus Sutra. On several occasions, flowers come floating down from the sky. It's filled with all of that beautiful, beautiful imagery. Just a quick catch-up for the few that weren't here. We did chapters 1 and 2 of the 28 chapters of the Lotus Sutra. The first chapter just describes the many hundreds and thousands of beings were at the at the reading or at the presentation of the Lotus Sutra that Shakyamuni Buddha was giving everyone. There were the arhats there, his old disciples, some of his newer disciples that were following the Bodhisattva Mahayana path, and then lots of beings from different realms. And if that weren't enough, a beam of light came out of the Buddha's forehead where he illuminated the many other lands, hundreds of other Buddha fields that were also reciting the Lotus Sutra at the very same time as the Shakyamuni Buddha was preaching the Lotus Sutra to this Saha world that we're in. So it was quite a dramatic presentation of the first verse. And the second verse is called Skillful Means, which is one of the main themes of the Lotus Sutra. Meaning that the Buddha teaches people to their ability to understand the Dharma. And that makes intuitive sense to all of us. We want people to feel comfortable practicing the Dharma, whether they're here for Zazen instruction like we had Saturday, or whether they've been here for 25 years. We want people to hear the Dharma and be comfortable with the Dharma. And so the Dharma is taught by Buddha's example with skillful means, what people are able to hear and understand. And in that first chapter, or in the second chapter of skillful means, which is75 and 13 is This is the skillful means chapter, which kind of sets the tone. He describes, he says that, you know, the whole works that we've been, he's talking to his arhats. He says, you know, we've been talking about our own liberation, dropping our grasping nature, the way it is taught in the Four Noble Truths, the truth of suffering and the truth of grasping that causes suffering. So the arhats have all been working on dropping their grasping nature, and when they're able to do so, they themselves experience nirvana. If they do it when they're alive, correct me, Kokyo, if it's all completed when they're alive, it's called nirvana with remainder, meaning their body still remains. And once that body expires or dies, then they go into nirvana without remainder. So the two types of nirvana. So Shakyamuni says, you know, that teaching I did with skillful means. Everyone was a beginner then. Everyone was just learning, was just hearing my teaching for the first time. And that teaching got us all here, got a sangha formed, got us to practice very hard. But as a matter of fact, the Shravaka way, which is this teaching the arhats, the Shravaka way, the Pratyeka vehicle, that those are the Pratyeka Buddhas, were the people that kind of had great insight all on their own without a teacher, maybe not even without a sangha to help them, but the great wise men that knew the truth of suffering and the liberation from suffering. That Pratyeka Buddha path, That's not quite it either. As a matter of fact, you know, the Bodhisattva path, the Mahayana path, you know, can lead to unsurpassed, complete, perfect enlightenment and open our hearts, so that we want to teach other people this Buddha path, this enlightenment. That's getting pretty close. The Mahayana path is getting pretty close. So these three vehicles were not quite it. We're not quite the whole thing. The whole thing is I'm calling the one Buddha vehicle, where the great matter, the great reason that Buddhas come into the world is to teach the Buddha mind, the Buddha wisdom, the Buddha heart. And so that's the real, my real teaching here as I expound this sutra. The one Buddha vehicle, or the one vehicle. And so he speaks about that. And now, yes.
So I just put a little note here in my book that I read quite a while ago, like 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I put 10 suchnesses. Are there really 10 suchnesses?
Yeah. Now, we went over those suchnesses last week, Edie. That causes me to go way back in my notes. I may not have brought that page.
Unique characteristics, nature, powers, embodiment, actions, causes, conditions, effects, rewards, and retribution. Don't remember what part it was in.
So I'll be able to find it here.
But that is the one vehicle, isn't it?
Well,
he
actually, that is part of this one, that is part of the unsurpassed, complete, perfect enlightenment. That is the Buddha's, body, the Buddha's mind, the Buddha's heart, is this understanding. So here you can read from the top of the page, Edie.
But this is a nutshell, Putra. No more needs to be said. Why? Because what the Buddha has achieved is more rare. Is most rare and difficult to understand. Only among Buddhas can the true character of all things be fathomed.
And Dogen translates this as, only a Buddha with a Buddha can understand the true character. And then go, please continue.
Oh, I see the suchnesses. This is because every existing thing has such characteristics, such a nature, such an embodiment, such powers, such actions, such causes, such conditions, such effects, such rewards and retributions, and yet such a complete fundamental coherence.
So this is a... I called these last week the entryways to, from the line above, to the true character of all things. If we want to understand, as the Buddha would like us to understand, the true nature of reality, the true character of all things, we might look at its, the characteristics of say this table or this projector, and the Buddha has said that the characteristics are suchness, the characteristics are empty of characteristics. That's what Teigen says, that we can think of the word suchness as equal to emptiness. So the characteristics of all things are empty. The nature is empty. The embodiment, I actually don't know what an embodiment of anything is, but the embodiment of something is empty. The powers that it might have, like an idea, like, you know, the ideas of Bernie or the ideas of Hillary or the ideas of Donald are really empty. The actions of all of us are empty. So these are the 10 suchnesses, or if you think of all the ways you might describe something, you know, characteristics, embodiment, nature, they're all empty.
Could embodiment be something like the self, like the idea of the self?
Could it be like that inherent nature that's talked about so much in Nagarjuna? Yeah, that's what comes to mind for me too. Yes, thank you for reminding us. That's another important part of this chapter. So I think I was at 96 here. Actually, it's 93 plus 13 is 106. So he has said that there's only the Buddha way. There's only the fact that we practice to realize our Buddha nature, and that people can realize their true nature by many different ways. Does someone want to start at the top there?
If anyone, for the Buddha's sake, designs and erects images carved with appropriate features, they have fulfilled the Buddha way. Some use the 7 precious materials, or nickel, copper, and bronze, lead, and tin, and the like, or iron, wood, or clay, or resin, and lacquer to make or to adorn Buddha images. All such people have fulfilled the Buddha way. Some paint Buddha images of many colors and adorn them with 100 signs of good fortune, whether done by themselves or by informing others. All have fulfilled the Buddha way. Even if little children at play use reeds, sticks, or brushes, or even the fingernails to draw images of Buddha, all such people gradually gain merit in developing the great compassion, have fulfilled the Buddha way.
Thank you. So even, you know, what do you think of, you know, what would be the situation that a little child, you know, is just kind of sitting and with a stick, you're drawing a Buddha image in the dirt. You know, maybe when their parents are in here sitting and they're out waiting for the bell to ring and then they see all of our Buddhas in the garden, you know, maybe that's when they might, you know, draw something. You know, one imagines that a child that does that, you know, has been moved maybe by a story that their parents have told them, or they really like the look on the face of one of the, but their heart might be open. It's something they want to connect to, and so even you know, that kind of momentary focus of drawing a picture in the dirt, you know, with open heart and some knowledge of the Buddha's teachings. The Buddha says here, they have fulfilled the Buddha way. This made me think of our own Dogen, who says, one moment of practice is a moment of enlightenment. Or, in this language, one moment of sitting is a fulfillment of the Buddha way. I think they're related. That kind of open-hearted, focused, experience of the world is the same here in the Lotus Sutra as Dogen says, with one moment of practice is a moment of enlightenment. Suzuki Roshi says that wisdom, prajna, the Buddha's own wisdom, is actually occurs when we just turn ourselves in the direction of a Buddha. So when we're going about our day, and we have a moment of mindful attention, mindful awareness, where we open our hearts and fill our Dharma space and connect with the environment around us, we've oriented ourselves in the direction of the Buddha, and this is Buddha's wisdom. This is the body and mind of Buddha. So these two ideas were presented to us in this chapter on skillful means. One, the concept of the Buddha teaches to what people can understand, to make people comfortable with the Buddha way. And he pointed out to his students that even the Shravaka way that we've all been studying for these 40 years was my skillful attempt to get people to start studying the Buddha way. And now I want to teach you the Bodhisattva way and the one Buddha vehicle. So this continues in chapter 3, which is 107 plus 13 is 120. Michael, I think you said that you were going to give us a synopsis of chapter 3.
Well, you told me I was to read it by the synopsis, but yeah. I'll do that. Best I can. Need some help. Should I start?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, when I was talking to Patrick, and the Dota Sons, I don't get this, but anyways, I think I'm getting a little bit off it. I guess it's in like a couple parts. There's this parable where it's Buddha, right? It's doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Where he has three sons, and they're in this house. But he describes the house as being dangerous. There's maggots and all kinds of things in the house. It doesn't sound like a very nice house to be in. But the kids seem to be in there, and they are doing their being greedy, equal, and have desires. And that's where the parable is coming from, where they're in there, and they don't care about what's going on around them. They're enjoying their own selves. And it catches on fire. And the Buddha said, come on out. The house is on fire. You've got to get out. And they don't want to leave. They're still consumed with their own pleasures, and he's trying to figure out some way to bring them out. And eventually, he offers them a beautiful chariot. Each one is going to get a beautiful vehicle, chariot. They come out.
So there's three of them.
Three.
So they're each going to get.
Transferred to the great vehicle, the one vehicle.
Well, so let's So that's the clue. Vehicle is the clue. So there's they're each promised a unique vehicle, and that lures them out of this burning house, and when they get there, they're not disappointed, but what they are presented with are three identical vehicles. They were promised, you know, one vehicle was going to be pulled by a goat and one by a deer and one by a cow. But what they get are these beautiful, ornate vehicles pulled by a white ox. So this is the title of this parable is The Parable of the Burning House, and is kind of another lesson from the Buddha, you know, about the three prior vehicles, the Shravaka path, which is pejoratively called the small vehicle, the large vehicle of the Mahayana path, and then the Pratyeka Buddha vehicle. These are good teachings to start our practice. But for Buddha's complete teaching, which includes the unsurpassed perfect wisdom of emptiness and the open-hearted bodhicitta of wanting others in the saha world, wanting to teach others this unsurpassed perfect enlightenment before we ourselves go into nirvana, we must practice the one Buddha vehicle, the big carts pulled by the white dragon. Pratyeka Buddhas were, like Eckhart Tolle. They're wise. They're people with their own. They're so wise that they think of the Four Noble Truths, and the liberation from suffering, and they practice the liberation from suffering all on their own. They haven't been part of the Buddha Sangha. And actually, Thich Nhat Hanh points out that in many of them, this is a Mahayana sutra that we talked about, first appeared for people in about the year 200 CE. In many of the Mahayana sutras, there are disparaging references to those Pratyeka Buddhas who don't understand anything, or those people that practice the small vehicle that don't have they couldn't even think of practicing the right way, but Thich Nhat Hanh says that one of the reasons that the Lotus Sutra has found such great favor, especially throughout Eastern Asia, China, Japan, and Korea, is that he speaks kind of lovingly of his earliest disciples that have practiced arhatship for a generation and have liberated themselves. And he says the ultimate message is that the Pratyeka Buddhas, the arhats, they too will be learning the bodhisattva way, and they too will have their Buddha fields and become a Buddha. He kind of pulls everybody along rather than using violent or rejecting speech the way that is sometimes portrayed in other Mahayana sutras. So So he's preaching the Lotus Sutra to all of his disciples, no matter which vehicle they have been studying.
And just to clarify, though, this vehicle is beyond the Mahayana vehicle.
The Mahayana seems to be pretty close. The Mahayana seems to be pretty close to the one Buddha vehicle. As a matter of fact, he says in here, and maybe I've chosen one of the lines, but he says to before he goes into the parable of the burning house, he tells Shariputra, who he's talking to in this sutra, he says, Shariputra, you are going to be a Buddha. Your name will be Dharma Light Buddha, and your Buddha field will be Free from Dirt, is going to be the name of your Buddha field. And he says, you know, you will have the opportunity of practicing the Bodhisattva way with many hundreds and thousands of Buddhas along the way. So you will be thoroughly versed in Bodhisattva practice. And then you will be given the name Dharma Light Buddha and introduced to your Buddha field. So it looks like Bodhisattva practice seems to be a big part of ultimately becoming Buddha and having your own Buddha field.
Does all this predate Tibetan Buddhism?
Well, the Tibetans study the Lotus Sutra. So the Tibetan Buddhism started around the time of Christ or the century before.
Like 8th century, pretty late.
Yeah, so this did predate Tibetan Buddhism. I'm looking. This has a good description of where is it? A good description of this burning house. What's 118 plus 13 is 131. Okay, this is the field I wanted. Suppose there was an elder who owned a large house, and this house was very old, decaying and falling apart. Its great rooms were in dangerous condition, its pillars broken, rotting, its beams and rafters leaning askew, its foundation in a state of collapse. Walls and partitions were cracked. Okay, down. 500 people were crammed in this house. Okay, I don't know how to get that lower now. Maybe I'll just... Maybe I'll try this. There were places stinking with excrement, overflowing with filth. There was dung beetles and worms. Foxes and wolves and jackals bit and trampled each other to gnaw on carcasses, scattering the bones and flesh. Packs of dogs, gaunt with hunger and shrinking with fear, looking everywhere for food, came running to snatch and grab. So I think all of this is to show that we, and the kids were still wanting to be in such an environment. as if, you know, we hold on so tightly to our suffering. It takes quite a bit to let go. You know, what does it take? I mean, it took me 40 years to bump into the Zen Center. I was perfectly happy for 40 years, fighting with dogs for my food, sweeping the excrement out of my bedroom. We hold on pretty tightly to our suffering. We don't even realize it. The kids are described as having a great time.
Well, I sort of saw that as there's all this suffering going around them and all this stuff, but their own desires are focusing. You know, the desires are still keeping them there. So the suffering we have, we still have our desires to sort of please ourselves.
Yeah.
I see in the prose part before the verse, it says this house only has one doorway. It's in some use.
Yeah. So it's. I mean, that means it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard to get out of this house. You kind of say, well, I don't know. Things aren't really going so well with my life. You know, my relationship situation isn't so good. You know, what's a good way to feel better about my life? And then we go downstairs and the doorway is in flames. We go, oh, I can stay in this relationship another few years. it's not so bad. He likes cats.
next month we'll be talking about the sixth extinction through climate change.
Oh,
that's coming. The house is in flames.
Yeah. And we see it all the time. I mean, we had the hottest year in record, and you know, and we felt good about it. You know, it was great weather. We didn't have to worry about that pesky rain. I think that's the mindset that we get into. So you're very right. On PBS, you know, like every amphibian in the world is now infected with a fungus. You know, there's very few frogs around, and newts and salamanders. I mean, like a tenth of what there were a decade ago. I mean, it's massive, and it's horrible, and that we continue to. I mean, I drove here tonight in my car that uses gas. Yeah.
When I've heard the story before, I think about how just habituated we are to our suffering.
There's
a sense of being so habituated. If we were just thrown into it, maybe we would feel a little bit shocked. But because we've been, you know, our culture, our family, and we're in it, and we get used to it. We have troubles every week. Every week's been a hard week. Every day we're tired. Mm-hmm. We're just caught in this. It's so habitual. We have trouble stepping out and looking at the overview of our lives, even as bad as it's at.
Yeah.
Maybe get habituated to it.
Yeah. Well, let's go down to another example. What page are we on here? We're on. Is that 120? I want to go to 123. Okay. That's exactly where I wanted to start. This is a dread. Read that, Yarrow.
Oh,
father's warnings, they remained absorbed in their games and did not stop playing. Mm-hmm. Then the elder thought to himself, my children are acting this way, adding to my anxiety and anguish. Right now, there is not a single thing in this house to enjoy. Yet my children, bewitched by their games, pay no attention to my instructions and will be destroyed by the fire. And then he considered devising some skillful means.
I'm sorry.
And said to his children, I have many kinds of rare, attractive playthings.
I can't. Where? Let's go to the kitchen.
Treasured carriages. Whoops.
Uh-oh.
There you go. Goat carriages and deer carriages and carriages with big oxen. They're outside the gate. Let's go out and see them. Made these carriages especially for you. You can play with any of them in whatever way you like. And when the children heard him tell about the carriages, they immediately raced each other, dashing out of the house to reach the open yard, away from the painful troubles. Seeing his children escape from the burning house and alive in the square, the elder sat on a lion's seat and congratulated himself, saying, "Phew, now I'm happy. These children were difficult to raise, ignorant, young, and foolish. They went into this dangerous house."
I think we're going to make Yara the head of our Zen Center Sunday school.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can read them.
Full of poisonous creatures and fearful goblins, with the raging flames of the terrible fire breaking out all around them, these children stuck to their play. I rescued them and enabled them to escape from harm. This is the reason, good people, that I am now happy.
Okay, the very last one. If you children come out, I will give you the three carriages, and you can choose whichever you like. Now is the time. Please give them to us. The elder was very wealthy. He had storehouses of gold, silver, lapis lazuli. He made great carriages, magnificently adorned, bells hanging on all sides, twisted golden cords with nets of pearls were spread over the top. Garlands and golden flowers were hanging here and there. So many beautiful. Over them were spread the best quality of fine felt, snow white and pure, worth hundreds of billions. Great white oxen, sleek, sturdy, strong, of handsome build, were yoked to the treasured carriages along with servants and guards. And so they got the one great carriage, and they were very happy with that. All living beings are my children, but deeply attached to worldly pleasures, they are without wisdom. The threefold world is not safe, just as a burning house. So this is the Buddha's summation, the way we've done it. Then the Buddha gives us a little warning on 131 plus 13 is 144. I can do that with my thumb. 144. The page number.
Oh.
There's page numbers, but then there was all those the introduction and the table of contents. So the page up there. I just want to see. There's 144. Is actually 13 more than 131. So start with, there are things in this sutra. Where is that? Mm-hmm. Oh, at the very bottom. Someone start reading right there.
There are things in this sutra beyond the powers of all the Shatrakas and the Pachakavudas. Even you, Shatrakutra, could enter this sutra only through faith.
Well, I think that's the line I wanted to get. Only through faith. So, you know, the Shariputra had been had been practicing a certain way for, you know, all of his adult life. And the Buddha says that I'm going to teach this new way, this new, I'm going to teach something brand new. And as a matter of fact, we learned last week that when the Buddha said this a little bit ago, 5,000 arhats, monks and nuns got up and left. They said, I don't want anything new. This practice is fine already. So Shariputra has entered this on faith, has said, okay, I'll give this a try. It's different, but I'll give it a try. I've developed some faith in the Buddha and how he's taught before. We joked a little bit in some other gathering about, you know, brand new people come in here and they sit for 40 minutes. They probably are pretty comfortable, or they think, okay, sitting quietly is what I want to do. I can do this. I can come in and sit for 40 minutes. And then we stand up for service and we all line up. And all of a sudden, everybody drops to the floor, and the brand new people look around and say, "What is going on here?" You know, we're really asking them to enter this practice, you know, on faith. You know, okay, I've heard from my therapist about meditation. I've heard from my school. These two kids, you know, and their father, they came back again. Yeah, they were here. They all three of them sit like little soldiers. They're learning mindfulness in school. And,
4 minutes, right?
Yeah. 4 minutes is their max, but now they've done two periods of 40 minute meditation. They did a lot better. They did better this week, didn't they? You know, so they had to, and now one of the kids knows how to find the sutra in the book and shows his other brother and I think they're in junior high. And
we've had some high school students show up too, who are like, they're studying religion in the class.
Yeah. But really, you know, at every step of the way, we kind of enter that next step on faith. Or, You know, I was here for, you know, a few months and enjoying the practice. And then everybody jumped in the car. We all carpooled up to Jikoji and said, let's sit solid for 3 days in a row. And all of us, you know, I mean, everyone was so new. Catherine had to teach the Orioki instruction. There wasn't anybody in the group that even knew how to do Orioki. And we were all up there stuck. You know, we couldn't get away because, you know, all of this came in like four cars. So we had to stay the whole 4 days. And we did it because, you know, we had just a little bit of faith, that, okay, you know, we can do this. We've heard that, you know, they've been doing this at Tassajara for 20 years now. Let's give this a try. So I think that's the line I wanted. Shariputra, you entered this sutra, you entered this practice through faith. And it's kind of sweet to remember, you know, how we entered every step along the way with, okay, I'll give this a try. Let's see how this works out. I'll give this a try. It's kind of nice to remember that. And maybe try to approach, you know, our life that way, you know, even though we kind of, you know, do the same thing, the alarm set for the same time, we cook the same meals for ourselves every day. Is there a way that we can, you know, have that mind, that, as Suzuki says, beginner's mind, where we're entering the threshold of this next moment, totally through faith. Faith that the universe has taken care of us so far, even despite our suffering. I've got a little faith that that the people around me and my practice can can help me get through this very next breath.
Patrick,
yes.
This is where I had a question when I was reading this, because it seems like Buddha's saying he's segregating. He's saying some people get this and some people don't. I always figured the Buddha would want to share this with everybody.
Well,
so, you know, he said, do not teach a sutra to the arrogant, the lazy, do not shallow people. It seems like that's who really would need it.
Yeah. How is this understood? Because I have marked a line here where maybe it's in Liz's sutra about how with this idea of skillful means that everyone is treated equally. But I did this part of the sutra is a little bit odd.
Goes on to tell you what's going to happen. Under this Lotus Sutra, you are going to hell. And it goes on and on, says all these bad things are going to happen.
Yeah, I think that's the part that I've.
They cut themselves off from all
sin. Yeah. So if anybody slanders this sutra, they cut themselves off from all the seeds of becoming a Buddha in this world. Or if someone scowls or harbors doubts, well, I've certainly had a few doubts. I don't know if someone talked in here about the two kinds of doubts. You know, there's the doubts that, you know, get us scowling and saying, you know, I never want to step in here again. And there's also the doubts that kind of open us up and say, I'm not so sure about that, but I'm curious about it. I'm interested. Let me take a look at that further. So I think this is the first kind of doubt that gets you scowling. Listen, and I will tell you how they'll suffer for their sins. Whether the Buddha's in the world or after his extinction, if anyone slanders a sutra such as this, or seeing others read and recite or copy this, or bears grudges against them, listen, and I'll tell you how they'll suffer for their sins. After their lives have come for their end, they'll enter the deepest purgatory. And they'll come out of that purgatory, they'll fall into the realm of animals and become lean and scruffy dogs, dark and discolored with scabs, and kicked around. So,
isn't it part of the skillful means? It's there for some people who go,
I sectioned this just to remind me of how colorful the language is, we've got 28 chapters to cover. This is a whole book. This isn't commentary. This is the whole sutra. We're basically just jumping on the high spots. And I really encourage people to read more of it. Because it comes up with great language like this, and this really kind of draws me in.
Do you remember Patrick that Charlie Picordi memorizes page for page? I don't think after a couple of years he could recite the whole thing, but he did memorize the whole sutra.
Oh gosh!
Yeah. It's possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was his practice.
Wow. Years.
Yeah. Years. Yeah. Yeah.
That's good. Well, at the end of this class, we'll do a lottery, and the winner of the lottery will have the opportunity to memorize the entire sutra. Well, I don't know how. Kokyo doesn't know how he got this, but it's this book.
Yeah.
A person can. Yeah. So maybe somebody bought the book and then, you know, online and passed it on to Kokyo. But there are other translations that we know how to get that are free. Yeah, this is the book, Reeves, and it's sort of a modern translation. Some of the others are more of the King James Version.
Just a thought about this slandering the sutra a bit. You know, it seems like a lot of the Mahayana sutras have this self-promotional thing in them. Mm-hmm. Like the Prajnaparamita also has this, all this stuff. If you take up one verse of the sutra, the merit is better than the offerings to Buddhists. And here too, I hear it as not so much really about the book of the sutra, but more like if you're close to the one vehicle, you're gonna suffer. And the Prajnaparamita, if you open to emptiness, the merit is much greater than all these offerings to Buddhists. Mm-hmm. So that the language is take up a line of the sutra, don't sign of the sutra.
Yeah.
It's more like the inner meaning of the sutra.
Okay, thank you. 136, what is this, 133? I found a line on 136 that I wanted. Who should study this sutra? Or maybe I just made that up. Start there. Where is that? But if there are any who are clever, understanding, and wise, learned, and of good memory, like Charlie Picorni, who seek the Buddha way, to such people you may teach it. So someone who, you know, maybe has, you know, like the child who's scrawling the Buddha image in the dirt, someone who just for a moment has been moved by something, by a Buddhist teaching or a Buddha image, that's the person that needs further teaching and looking at this sutra. To such people. If there are people who have already seen hundreds and thousands and millions of Buddhas, planted many roots of goodness, and been firmly and deeply committed, to such people you may teach it. If there are diligent people, always compassionate, never sparing their bodies or lives, to such people you may teach it. So this is the yin and yang of you know, if people are sneering at you, you know, kind of hold off there a little bit. someone who's open-hearted, has been moved by a Buddha teaching or a Buddha image, start there. Did anybody volunteer to give us a synopsis of chapter 4. I forget who.
Patrick asked a question.
Please, Michael.
Who is this written for? Who's supposed to be listening? This was written. Who's the audience for this? Like me, and I'm supposed to be scared if I don't jump in and not see the rewards?
Well, these particular words. Well, on one level, you know, we read in the chapter 1 that everybody, in addition to all the arhats, in addition to all the bodhisattvas, there were these four groups: the laymen, the laywomen, the monks, and the nuns.
And they're supposed to read the Lotus Sutra.
They were there when this was preached. And then when this was written down, supposedly a few hundred years later, it really was anyone who wanted to study the Buddha way. This was one of the sutras available. By the year 200, the Pali Canon, you know, started becoming available. Some of the we learned last week that that the Prajnaparamita Sutras were already out, so people were studying emptiness, and this was another one in the mix. So this was available for the four groups to study: lay men, lay women, monks, and nuns. So, chapter 4. Get my glasses again. It's called Faith and Understand. No, that's...
Yeah, Faith and Understanding.
Faith and Understanding. This is the explains the parable of the prodigal son. This is a pretty short chapter. I've just got one reference to it. Page 142, so that's 155. World-honored one, we now... So the Buddha has taught the burning house. The Buddha has taught about the skillful means and the one Buddha vehicle. And now his kind of senior people, approach the Buddha. His senior people, like Mahakashyapa, you know, like Madgalyayana, are saying to Buddha, "We thank you for this teaching. Let's see if we've got it right. Can we tell you, Buddha, a story of what we think you're telling us? And you can tell us if we're thinking in the right way." So this story of the prodigal son actually comes from Mahakashyapa and Modgalyayana, you know, two of Buddha's earliest disciples. And they say, someone just start and read the first couple of paragraphs. World-honored one, we would now like to use a parable. Who would like to start reading there?
Overcooking.
At the very
World-honored one, we would now like to use a parable to clarify what we mean. Suppose a still young man left his father, ran away, and lived in some other land for a long time, for 10, 20, or even 50 years. The older he became, the poorer and more needy. He wandered around in every direction looking for clothing and food until finally, by chance, he was heading toward his homeland. Meanwhile, the father had searched for his son unsuccessfully and now lived in another city. His household had become very wealthy. His goods and treasuries included gold, silver, lapis lazuli, coral, amber, crystal, and other gems overflowed in storehouses. He also had many rooms and servants, clerks and attendants, and countless elephants, horses, carriages, oxen.
He had the whole works.
His revenues and investments spread out to other lands. There were also many merchants and traveling traders around. At this time, the poor son, wandering through village after village and passing through various lands and cities, at last reached the city where his father was living. Although his son had been away for more than 50 years, his father had always thought about it. But he had never spoken of the matter to anyone. And when he pondered it to himself, his heart full of remorse and regret. He thought, "Oh, Lord, how I have great wealth, gold, silver, and other treasures ever from our storehouses, yet I have no son. Someday my end will come and my wealth will be scattered and lost, for there is no one to whom I can leave it."
Okay, so Mahakashyapa is telling this to the Buddha, saying there's a wealthy father who has a lot to give to his son if he could ever find someone who could pass on the wealth to. And then there's a son who kind of was lost and roaming around and is pretty poor. The father, I guess, moved into another neighborhood when the father started gaining some wealth. So the son didn't recognize the father, nor did he recognize that this was the house he grew up in. So they meet. And let's see if I've got any more. 144, which is 157. That's just two pages. 157 at the bottom. What did I want to say there? It's about faith and understanding. So this chapter is called Faith and Understanding. Can you see the word faith up there? And then, so there's understanding is at the very bottom. Then the poor son, though pleased with all of this, still thought of himself as a humble laborer. Thus, for 20 years, he continued to be employed removing dung. The father was afraid of revealing himself, so he lured this young man, this noble young man, in saying, you know, I could give you a job shoveling dung. So he did it for 20 years. After that, he gained confidence. For 20 years, he continued to be employed. After that, he gained confidence in each. The father and son gained confidence in this practice of dung shoveling. And the son felt he could come and go easily. So the son started being comfortable with an entry-level job like giving up desires, like sitting still for 40 minutes. The son had some faith that, I can take on the next thing because I feel pretty comfortable. I've got faith in this. And then the world-honored one, the old man, became ill, knowing that he would die soon. He said to the poor son, I now have abundant gold, silver, rare treasures filling my storehouses to overflowing. I want you to have a detailed understanding. So this chapter is called Faith and Understanding of the quantities involved and of what should be received and paid out. So the father is saying, now I want you to have unsurpassed, complete, perfect enlightenment. I want you to have a full understanding of the wealth of this enterprise. I think I wanted to answer for myself why this chapter was called Faith and Understanding. And of course, then the moral of the story is that the son reveals that all, or the son finally understands that all along he had this great, how can we use this metaphor? All along he was going to inherit this no matter what he thought of himself, but he finally realized his nature of being able to inherit complete, perfect understanding. Have I kept that metaphor pure, or have I adulterated it? These arhats, Mahakashyapa and Moggallayana, said, We want to get this straight. We were like the prodigal sons. We were practicing hard for all these years. We were pretty happy with this job. We weren't living on the streets anymore. We weren't mendicant monks. We really had a way and a vision. But now you're telling us there's something that we're inheriting the treasure trove of unsurpassed, complete, perfect enlightenment. Our hearts are open to this, and we do want other people to realize their treasure, that they have this treasure within them. So this is that parable. This is the parable of the prodigal son. We've had this in us all the time, and now with this teaching, we understand the Buddha's deepest teaching of unsurpassed, complete, perfect enlightenment. Neti.
And then that last one, yeah, just going off the bottom of the page, be careful to see that there are no careless losses. I guess that is saying once you have the teachings, really take care of the teachings, always check in that you're not diluting it in any way or...
Supposedly Buddha was giving this towards the end of his teaching career, not quite parinirvana, but with people, and maybe the Buddha thinking, you know, this could be one of my last teachings. I want you to have it all. And he's using the metaphor of, you know, of economics or QuickBooks. You know, I've got this much lapis lazuli, I've got this much adamantine furniture. I don't want you to lose a nougat. Edie.
Well, I'm thinking of also, to me, it's teaching non-separation.
Yeah, say more.
So he's not really separate from this treasure trove.
There's
no separation. It's all, you know, it's like you already have the keys to the kingdom, and there's really not a separation.
He's shoveling dung, but within this great palace already, and he probably realizes what a great world he's living in, even if his job is, you know, as a laborer. But you're right. He's not ever, maybe this is the answer to Michael's question. Those people that that in the last chapter we shouldn't teach the sutra to, maybe even then this laborer, his nature was for the Buddha wisdom and Buddha heart, Buddha mind. The understanding that this unsurpassed complete enlightenment is this understanding of the true nature of reality, that all is empty, that there are the suchness of all things is Buddha's unsurpassed complete perfect enlightenment. What time is it now? I don't have the...
5 to 8.
5 to 8. Maybe we should start next week with the medicinal plants, with the parable of the plants, which is chapter 5. People can read chapter 5. We're also going to be kind of working our way up to chapters, you know, let me get it here. People can read ahead. Ten, 11, and 12. If people want to start reading there. You've got chapter 6? We'll do chapter 6, and actually Charlie wants to do chapter 7. Yeah. We'll get through it all, because chapter 6 is we want to hear about being assured of becoming a Buddha. Chapter 7 is the parable of the magic city, which is also a famous parable. And then we'll get in probably the next week into Buddha's lifespan and the underground bodhisattvas. Thank you very much. May the merit of our study help us with our practice to save all beings. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.